Main thing I want to do is apologize for not being Dr. Alpha Ba, who is the Senegalese man who has been leading all of this work in Cote d'Ivoire. He's much better looking, and I'm sorry, and he could have done it in French and English, which I won't do, but he didn't get permission to travel, so I'm doing this on his behalf and the behalf of the team in Cote d'Ivoire. What I'm going to talk about will seem, I hope, to most of you as very commonsensical, and you may wonder why I'm even talking about it, because I'm going to describe a very simple process that we are using in Cote d'Ivoire. We have a large project in Cote d'Ivoire that's working with civil society organizations on HIV/AIDS issues and also working with the universities to improve the curriculum in teaching HIV/AIDS. And I'm going to describe a 3 or 4 day process we use to help to develop the civil society organizations, which are vastly different. We have a lot of very different organizations we're working with. And first I have to figure out how to make this thing go forward. Okay, great, thank you. Yeah, I have nothing to disclose. Normally, when we're working with civil society organizations or other areas in public health, we focus on the programmatic delivery of whatever they're doing, the technical soundness, we call it. And we don't pay much attention to the organizations at all, the context they're working in, which I think is a major error, especially when we're trying to develop local organizations. So we need to look more at financial viability and also the financial incentives they have. Administrative feasibility, whether they're organizationally capable of carrying out things, not just the programmatic things, but the other areas that support that. And perhaps the most crucial thing, if you really want something that's sustainable and will work, is stakeholder acceptability and commitment, whether there's really the internal organizational, administrative, or political will to do something. So the process we use to work with organizations is very much something that they have ownership of. It's not just participatory, it's really self-directed. I come from management studies, by the way. I have a dual MBA and a PhD in management studies from the University of the West Indies, which was a critique of foreign aid. And I've been looking a lot at the kind of pigeonholing tools that people are using, especially under PEPFAR, to diagnose where is an organization. And that kind of technique can work well if you are working with clinical service delivery or something like Starbucks, where you have a machine-like organization that is expected to produce the same things to certain standards over and over again. But if we're looking for really vibrant civil society organizations that are doing advocacy, behavior change, working with youth groups, working in the community to do poverty alleviation as well as HIV/AIDS, you've got things that are very different, and it's much more like psychiatry than it is like internal medicine. However, we have used some scoring tools in Cote d'Ivoire because some things that are systematic seem to lend themselves to scoring, and of course, if you can score, that's a good thing to do. This is one page example of a financial planning and management tool that we've used in Cote d'Ivoire. But the most important thing I have to say about that is if you look at this tool, I think it's about 12 pages long, and you look at all of the boxes that are checked, if you then read the qualitative report that's written on the findings, you will learn so much more. In fact, I'm doing another presentation on that on Wednesday. So much more about these organizations and what's going on and the incentives than you will from this tool. So I have this quote from Einstein I like to use because we are a little bit, I think, obsessed with statistical methods in public health, and most people are trained primarily in that, biostatistics, etc. Another point I want to make is the carpenter, even when we're using tools, because we have tools and processes, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit, is much more important than the tools. We would never think of sending somebody in a that has a healthcare problem to somebody with absolutely no training. In fact, we worry about whether to do task shifting and give things to nurses and other primary care workers that were with doctors before. And yet we send people into organizations, which are very complicated, with these very simple tools, who have no background in management, in organizational development, who've probably never run organizations themselves, and it's a little bit dangerous. It can be quite dangerous. Having tools is good, but a toolkit is a toolkit, and you decide which tools are appropriate. One of the things we start this workshop is a metaphor, and I will show you some examples of that in a minute. But when I was doing my doctoral research at the University of West Indies back in the 90s, I was struggling with all this data I had from 7 donor-dependent organizations in the health sector. 4 of them were multinational, 3 of them were national in scope. And I was trying to figure out how to structure this data, you know, how to present it. And I read this book, which is a classic in management literature. I think it's about 25 years old now, which came out of Canada. And he uses metaphors to classify organizations. You know, it could be a psychological prison. You're in the World Bank, and you get paid a lot of money, and you have status, so you can't leave, even though you're stressed and don't like your job. Or it could be a machine, like Ford Motor Corporation. So I found this very useful to capture the data for my own dissertation. And that made me think it might be a useful thing to do to help people understand their own organizations. So the first, and I've been doing this for maybe 15 years now, I started it in Cambodia, and this is actually, these are some pictures from Cambodia, where the people in the Reproductive Health Association of Cambodia were asked to draw a picture of their organization, and more importantly, explain why they drew that picture. What does it mean to them? What does it say about the organization? You've got bumblebees and octopus and a lot of different things. This is an example from Côte d'Ivoire, which is from a youth organization. One of the peer group educators drew this enfant à quatre pattes, a child on all fours. He said he described it as the organization can't think about tomorrow. It barely can understand a little bit about its immediate environment and not very much about that. It's not able to do much at all, certainly can't analyze, plan, etc. And one of the most interesting things about this drawing is that the president of the organization drew a rose, and he said a rose is perfection in nature, the smell, the color, the look, the this, and this organization is like a rose to Côte d'Ivoire. It is perfect. So we had the very imperfect peer group educator, young person who was quite honest about weaknesses, but also there's the potential for the child who's crawling to grow up, and the president who didn't want to look at any of the weaknesses at all, and a lot of conflict inside that organization because of that. Trees are very common. You know, a tree providing shade to the beneficiaries, there are fruits in the trees, the tree may or may not be watered, it may need more sunshine. This is from Nepal, a tea leaf, all the benefits of the tea plant. Also from Nepal, a bus that has a long way to go. It's a social marketing organization, but it's falling apart, it needs repairs, it hasn't been properly maintained, there's a lot that needs to be done. And this is my favorite one from Nepal. It's a donkey, a beast of burden, carrying some very important things on difficult terrain. It's very hardworking, very appropriate technology, et cetera. But its vision is very much narrowed because of the restrictions of the donor agency and the expectations of the donor agency. So they captured many things with this donkey. Again, from Côte d'Ivoire, a network organization where the headquarters of the network of over 100 HIV-focused organizations is supposed to be supporting the whole network. And so, again, this is a very young staff member who said it was like a mother hen. My God. Was like a mother hen and her chicks. And the mother hen wasn't taking very good care of the chicks. Okay. We also use a parable from India about the 6 blind men who feel the elephant. You know, there's the trunk, which is a snake, there's the tusks, which is a sword, the ears, which are fans, etc., to talk about how everybody has different images of an organization and how all those images are valid and they tell us different things about the state the organization is in. Sometimes we do a session called Why Do We Exist? Why does the organization exist? I frankly don't use this session many times because I think it's pretty apparent why they exist, and I discourage that kind of useless organizational navel-gazing. But sometimes it's a very important question to ask, especially with networks. So we spend time working on that issue. We also spend a lot of time doing just a basic SWOT analysis. It's very central. And for the strengths and weaknesses that are internal, we would normally only have the staff that are internal because they are willing to wash dirty laundry and talk about their weaknesses. And then for the opportunities and threats, we bring in some external stakeholders. The board could come at either place, depending on who's there. And many people inside the organization often don't understand their external environment at all. They don't think about their external environment, only maybe a couple of key managers. So we spend a long time on SWOT analysis, maybe a day and a half anyway. During this, the facilitators are supposed to be in the back seat, not guiding too much, but occasionally coming up and tapping people on the shoulder and saying, did you think of this or did you think of that? We do stakeholder interviews before we do the workshop, so we have a good idea of some of the issues inside these organizations. This is an example from Côte d'Ivoire where I put these posters up because they thought they were very good at behavior change communication and said, what's the message here? And what is the main reason that people don't go in for counseling and testing in Côte d'Ivoire? Well, the main reason is fear, with maybe 9 to 11 different sources. And so these posters clearly reinforce fear. And, you know, so we do things like this to provoke a really serious analysis of the organization, where it is, what it's good at, what it's not good at, what they might be able to change. So you sort of like a backseat driver tapping somebody on the shoulder. I've been given my 5-minute warning. So the point here is some people use other things besides SWOT. They might use SOAR, which is strengths, opportunities, aspirations, and results. I think it's very important to look critically at what's wrong as well as look at the good things and what you can do. Otherwise, you're not really understanding where you are. They do stakeholder maps to indicate who's out there in the environment, how important they are, how well connected they are to the organization or not well connected. This is a very complicated map to show many how many players are involved in one grant. We also will analyze stakeholders, especially for advocacy groups, to say who is a catalyst that might work with them, how much power do they have, who's a mover and a shaker, who's moderate, who has no power at all, even if they're on your side, to try to change those dynamics and think about what they are. Basically, the whole point of this 3-4-day workshop is what are we going to do for them, for their own capacity building, how will we do it, who will do it, and when will they do it? And we develop tailor-made indicators of progress. So this is an example from youth, where they might assign themselves to one of these rungs as a youth organization and then decide where they were and move forward. It might be just that they're saying how many of our so-called members are paying their association fees, because a lot of them will say they have hundreds of members, but who's actually paying their minimal dues? It might be a matter of declaring a fiscal year and producing financial statements, which none of the 7 organizations in Côte d'Ivoire had ever done. So there were a lot of tailor-made indicators of what is progress for these organizations. And they're basically looking for a vision of where they're going, where they have really internal political or administrative will to go, and figuring out how to measure that. Thank you.
Major differences or similarities about the
The issues that you identify that are weaknesses?
Yes.
Yeah. In Cote d'Ivoire, for example, and this was also true in Cambodia when I first went to Cambodia, they were producing financial reports on specific grants, but they'd never ever had a report on the whole organization, like a balance sheet and financial statement that would state in what happened during one fiscal year, or even declared a fiscal year. They wouldn't have known what a fiscal year was. And so that was an example that cut across almost all of these local organizations, not the one in Nepal. Mm-hmm.
And do you feel that helps them?
I think that's one of the areas where it gives them more credibility with the donors, and also their financial systems are very fragmented. They, you know, develop them for each donor, and if they've got multiple donors, that makes a real mess. They won't even have line items that are consistent across organizations. Yeah. The issue of the associations and whether members are really active, governance issues. Yeah. I mean, Cote d'Ivoire is especially corruption, you know, it's way down, like Senegal and Ghana are twice as well off in terms of the corruption indexes in Cote d'Ivoire. Yes?
I just want to ask your experience, like, organizations have their own values and their own, you know, vision, but then, like in wealthy countries, they are mostly inspected by the donor vision and donor objective. So, in your experience, how they have managed, how you advise organizations keep their vision and also keep the donor interest aligned?
Yeah, that is a huge problem. That was at the session I'm doing on Wednesday. We'll look at that a little bit too. It's an enormous problem. When I'm working directly with somebody, it's a matter of building their self-confidence partly and telling them, if you explain to the donor, when you've got an intelligent donor client, if you explain to them that if you do it this way, it's going to undermine the program in some way, undermine the organization, usually people will listen to that. I think frequently people feel they have to say yes sir, and they don't have the self-confidence to explain something that they understand better than the paying client. So I think something as simple as having, especially for better or worse, as a Westerner, you think they feel, well, you understand the system, and telling them it's okay, you can speak back because you know better than they do what will work or not work.